In Shakespeare's Macbeth, the title character speaks. I am in blood, stepped in so far that should I wade no more, returning were as tedious as crossing o'er. I am in blood, stepped in so far that should I wade no more, returning were as tedious as crossing o'er. In Macbeth's case, I am in blood refers to the river of blood caused by his murderous ambition to be the king of Scotland. And he's in so far that he realizes that going back requires at least as much effort as getting to the other side. But the meaning is more universally applicable because at those times in our lives when we're struggling with a tough challenge, often the only way out is through. Sometimes challenges are more personal. Sometimes they're more collective or societal. Think of World War II as an extreme example of a societal challenge. And I will speak more on handling personal challenges on November 12th. But today I want to deal for a few minutes with our collective challenges. And I want to discuss five broad areas quickly. And each one of these to be connected to some of our UU principles. So, the only way out is through. And the big umbrella of the only way out is through is nothing less than the health of the earth. The biosphere, as it's been called, including the climate, the environment, including habitat, including toxicity, all those things that we are dealing with in this 21st century that have never had to be dealt with before in human history. This, of course, ties in with our seventh principle, respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. So we affirm and promote these principles. And what is required to connect ourselves to the interdependent web in a way that does not harm and destroy the interdependent web is a revolution. Nothing less than a revolution of thought and perspective. What Thomas Kuhn called a paradigm shift. But as Kuhn pointed out in his book, The Nature of Scientific Revolutions, what happens first is that, and I'll paraphrase this far more scholarly language, before the paradigm shift happens, everybody freaks out. Everybody freaks out. We can't, what? What's being called for? I don't get it. It doesn't fit our former worldview. We can't quite absorb it. Old beliefs and patterns are not easily shifted because we are invested in the known. As someone once said, people are more familiar with or more comfortable with a problem that's familiar than with a solution that isn't. And that's true for so many of us in so many ways, myself included. But being conscious of that helps. Like, okay, if I'm invested in the old worldview, but a new worldview is being called for, what can I do? How do I negotiate this? And paradigm shifts are first met typically with disdain and scorn, followed by doubt, and sort of a scratching of the head of, maybe I do need to consider this. And finally, over time, into acceptance, where the old theory and the old practices become self-evident that they don't work anymore. And there's not as yet mass acceptance that the need to fundamentally shift our relationship with the interdependent web is necessary. It's growing. It certainly was born before the 60s, but especially in the 50s and 60s with Aldo Leopold's land ethic and with the environmental revolution and Earth Day, all that. But it still has large pockets of society who really don't want to look at it and see that it's real. And so another principle of ours comes into play, a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. A free and responsible search for truth and meaning. And this gets away from climate denial and all the other sort of things that will push science to the side and say, no, actually, our worldview doesn't allow for that. One of the places, and this brings me from the first piece I'm talking about to the second, one of the main places that our practices and ideas need to shift is in economics and in business. Because economics and business as they currently stand have brought us great wealth, although often at the expense of great poverty from those places in the world where our wealth is drawn from. And it needs to incorporate some of our principles beyond the interdependent web, like the inherent worth and dignity of every person, our first principle. Our second principle, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. Is the work world typically keen on that or attuned to that? Not typically. Profit above all. The goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. Do our current business and economic promises or our practices promise that? Not often. And I want to create a little, I want to bring this down to earth with a story. So there's two companies, they make widgets. One makes their widgets for, let's say, 95 cents and sells them for a dollar. So they make a nickel. The other makes it for 85 cents and sells it for 90 cents. So they make a nickel. But here's the deal. The first company does everything right. They deal with all their waste. They don't exploit people. They deal, you know, they all these things that need to be happened, and they don't leave any garbage behind. But it's in the store, their product costs a dollar. And there's a product next to it that costs 90 cents. But the thing is that the company who made the 90-cent product left a big mess behind them. They didn't follow the rules. They didn't care for the earth. They didn't do all these things. And so the people buy, the consumers buy a lot of 90-cent products, and the dollar, a few people buy the dollar product, but a lot of people buy the 90s, and all that money goes into the shareholders' pockets. And then what happens? The company pulls up and leaves town, and what's left behind? A toxic dump, because they didn't take that extra dime that they were making and put it into their practices. What do we call these sites? Superfund sites. Right. Why Superfund? Because it's so costly to clean up after the damage is done. And who pays for those damages? The taxpayers. We do. Everybody else who did not get a share of the profits of the company ends up subsidizing that company for the difference, the 10-cent difference in their product price that made the company and their shareholders millions of dollars. It's corporate welfare. It needs to stop. It is not in line with our principles, and it is not in line with a sustainable world. We need a radically different business as usual. Because like so many things in life, like even our little personal relationships, it is so less costly to prevent the damage in the first place than to try to clean it up afterward. And so we as citizens can demand a system that rewards responsibility and penalizes negligence rather than, as now, the opposite way around. What if we insisted that every corporation in America was a triple bottom line corporation? People, planets, and profit. Make a fair profit, but not at the expense of people, and you have to clean up your mess or prevent your mess so that you don't dump the planet and then expect everyone else to pay for it. Then and only then will business as usual be in line with Unitarian Universalist principles and principles of ethical and sustainable behavior generally. One of the other ways that we have, the only way out is through, is to realize that we live in a multicultural world. Again, there are places in this culture who want to just deny that, want to circle the wagons and tighten up the screws and protect their tribe at the expense of everyone else. But Tuesday is United Nations Day. And United Nations Day was founded when? After World War II, 2 months after World War II, because they saw that this idea that it's about us and our people and our country and our nation only, and we're going to ravage the rest of the world to create some sort of mythical safety and prosperity. They saw what a disaster that mindset brought on. And they said we have to create a mechanism, an institution to deal with the international problems that we face. And those cross-border problems, those borders have just only expanded since World War II. The UN's charter was signed by 51 countries in 1945, and today 103 countries are member states. Three of the main points of their charter is to maintain worldwide peace and security, to develop relations among nations, and to foster cooperation between nations in order to solve economic, social, cultural, or humanitarian problems. So again, the UN is an exemplar of how we need to think more broadly than nationalism. But it is vilified in some circles. It is vilified because certain groups of people want to say, that's a threat. Everyone out there, we can't take care of everybody, can we possibly? And that's not the idea, is that we're supposed to take care of everybody. We are supposed to consider everybody, though. We're supposed to see the big picture, the reality of our interconnected web of life on this one planet. So, one last one. All of these, economic sensibility, environmental sustainability, international cooperation, require transforming our governmental and political systems from a spiritual basis, from an ethical basis that is outlined in our seven principles, but goes beyond that. It is the same essential ethic that grows out of the Judeo-Christian tradition of treating your neighbor as yourself. It comes out of Buddhism, to understand that all life is suffering, and yet we suffer together, and through that empathy and compassion with another, we care. We learn to care for another as we would care for ourselves. This is cross-cultural along religious and ethical lines. From John Cooper's poem earlier, I live in a time and place where leaders bluster, posture, and shout, where citizens vent their opinions through rage and violence. Seeing the queen in all her age and grace, with her matching hat and purse, uplifts me. I'm wishing, even for a moment, that I am there. And on a heart level, don't we all wish that we were there? Now, I realize, just as in the U.S. Congress, Parliament has their share of nasty battles over policies. But still, the queen or the king archetype, the archetype of grace and refinement and civility and elegance, resonates in our heart as it did for John. We sometimes call our leaders dignitaries. If so, shouldn't they be dignified? Sometimes restrained, refined, even noble? Is that too much to ask? How far is that from what we're seeing around the world, and especially in Washington, D.C. today? What if we, the people, demanded a simple return to civility in our public discourse as a baseline? I said I'll discuss dealing with personal challenges in our November 12th talk, and that talk's going to basically about the human search for happiness. But one word on that here, because our personal quests for happiness do not take place in a vacuum. Now, there are some outliers who will find misery no matter if they're living in paradise. They'll find a way to be miserable. And there are some people who, in the worst of circumstances, seem to have a glow on their face about how great life is. Those are kind of the bottoms of each end of the bell curve, though. But most of us are deeply affected by the environments in which we live. And so if we're going to search for happiness, should not we have to consider our well-being in the context of, yeah, go pursue happiness, but do it in this divisive, dysfunctional, biased, unbalanced, inequitable, sometimes hateful, and violent environment? What's wrong with this picture? We have to find the collective ways to create systems and environments that invite and encourage happiness, well-being, personal fulfillment, community connection. Again, Shakespeare's Macbeth. I am in blood. Stepped in so far that should I wade no more, returning were as tedious as going o'er. Many Unitarian Universalists hold wide and deep circles of concerns in our hearts. And we long to bring justice to society at large. Justice and caring and compassion and equity. And of course, we do that via engagement, by becoming spiritual activists. We've talked some about that, and we're going to talk about the how-tos of that periodically as we go on throughout this year. And now more than ever, it's crucial to get in the game, to support and defend those, both human and other than human, our fellow creatures, the forests, the waters, the air, who can't ever get a breather from the game, who can't ever take a break from swimming upstream with all their strength, trying not to be swept away in the river of blood that our outdated systems feed. Our collective calling is to change that river of blood into a river of life for everyone and everything. We won't do it perfectly, but that is our aim. That is our aspiration. And we, in that aim, we are all in this together, and the only way out is through. Blessed be, and amen.